Due to the graphic nature of some of the content in this episode, listener discretion is advised. In the last 15 months, I've spent an ungodly amount of time on the phone, mostly with strangers, routing my way through a catalog of leads and referrals, seeking a deeper understanding of who Matt Stewart was and the circumstances surrounding his murder. Along the way, I've captured over 60 hours of audio and accumulated a novel's worth of notes. I find myself processing the same details and rumors over and over again, asking the same questions and hearing similar responses. But with a case like this, so cloaked in mystique and secrecy, all it takes is a slight variation to send you careening off into a tangent, and that's happened to me on a regular basis, where I'll hear or see something that propels me into researching a new person, event, or possible set of motives. Of the trees I've barked up, most, if not all, aren't holding the kinds of answers I've been looking for. And if you were to skim through those 60 hours of audio, you'd get an earful from a bizarre array of rabbit trails I've gone down in the past year. Subjects ranging from the life and crimes of a spree killer, a massive insurance fraud ring, and a raid of the state crime lab, just to name a few. There's no telling how much time I've wasted chasing shadows, tracking connections that were never really there. But with these episodes, I've done my best only to use parts of interviews I find most significant to Matt's case, leaving the more obscure stuff for my own personal files. But in time, I've found that significance is a bit of a fluid measurement. Tucked away in those 60 hours of audio, there's a few bits and pieces which, under the glow of hindsight, appear all too significant. My name is Freddie, and this is Unforgotten, a podcast series scouring for the context of a cruel and calculated crime, the unsolved murder of Matt Stewart.
Back in June, a husband and a wife were asleep in their upstairs bedroom here when a stranger came in, brutally attacked, and killed the husband.
Why aren't they going in the home? There's a little girl in there.
Why did that stuff never get reported? It's 10 years later.
No one heard gunshots.
No one heard gunshots?
They may know who did it. They may know exactly who did it.
She came to the door pounding on it.
She drove that mattress out of here.
At the end of the last episode, I told you about a tip I had been chasing since last summer, an account I heard first from the Garrisons and later from other neighbors, which centers around a woman who lived up the street from Matt and Angel in 2009. As I explained before, my initial attempts to contact Danielle fell flat, and after a week or so of trying, I went ahead and passed off what I had heard to investigators. While I figured it's unlikely anything that I've come across will be new information to them, I've gotten into a habit of disclosing things like this, just in case. Despite the radio silence from Danielle, without an outright refusal to talk to me, I continued my pursuit of this lead with another approach. Over the course of a few months, with every new person I spoke with who had any proximity to Mooresville, I'd bring up Danielle by name. I figured eventually I'd come across someone who still knows her, who would offer to pass along my request for an interview. But it wasn't until December that someone passed along information from a person they claimed could provide more details to that bizarre story I heard about a knock at the door and a $300 phone call. This new tip didn't get me to my long-awaited conversation with Danielle, but it did get me a phone call with someone who had lived in her house, her stepdaughter.
I was not home the night that it happened. I was at a friend's house, actually just a few minutes away, and when I tried to come home, they weren't letting anybody into the neighborhood. From what I remember, after the incident happened, Angel, Matt's wife, went running over to Sean Lawson's house. They had contacted the police. Angel's mother was there at the time, and she was actually on our front porch talking to my father and my stepmom. He had come to the house because that's actually what originally woke them up, was her pounding on the door.
I heard something. I want to run it by you. What I heard from a neighbor, they heard from your stepmom that Angel's mother, Matt's mother-in-law, asked to use her cell phone and told her that she would give her $300 if she could use her cell phone.
Yes, sir.
That happened?
I don't know about the amount for sure. I could not promise you. I know it was an outrageous amount. She did offer my stepmom some money so that she could use her phone. My stepmom was like, okay, well, who do you need to call? Because I'll dial the number. She said, don't worry about it. And my stepmom went back to her phone later on because she thought it was very strange. The phone number had been deleted out of the phone. No phone log in there. It was like everything for that day. It wasn't just that one phone call. It was like she somehow was able to delete everyone that they had contacted that day.
Everyone that your stepmom had contacted?
Yes.
Jesus Christ. So, yeah, but I just got to get my bearings here for a second.
From what I remember as well, that now my father is a very Catholic man. He does nothing wrong in his books. You know, he goes straight by the books with everything. My father told me that when Matt's parents were contacted during this whole hostage situation and nobody had been in the home yet, when they had pulled into the neighborhood, when they started to go down Shepherd Hill Drive, Angel's mother went running up to Matt's parents screaming that Matt had been shot and killed.
And killed?
Yes. And yet nothing was for sure yet. As far as everyone knew, if I remember correctly, they had a barbecue that morning or some type of get-together at their home that morning, or it was the morning before. Originally, the SWAT team had believed that somebody had snuck into the house and had hid out somewhere, and that's how they had gotten into the home. So that's why they realized that my father's home was the exact same model as Matt and Angel's. And it was the closest one to their house. So they had used my father's home to go in and see how the attic was shaped, how certain rooms, the bonus room and everything, because they had the exact same model. They had the exact same home.
You said it was like a cookout or something that happened in the morning?
Yeah, they believe that someone, it may have been someone that they know, or the fact that so many people were there that it was easy for someone to get into that house without Matt or Angel knowing and had hid out. Which is why the SWAT team had gone to my father's home.
The call to 911 came in from the Lawson at 12:45. The SWAT team didn't enter the house until after 2. So the SWAT team would have been going through your house in between those two times.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Did your dad or stepmother, did they know the Stewarts?
Oh, yes, yes. We knew them very well. Angel was friends with Mrs. Lawson, not close friends, but acquaintances. I mean, all the suburban housewives all talk. Now, I have a younger sister who was 3 at the time, who sometimes they did, like, play dates with one of Matthew's daughters. So, you know, all of them were the same age. They'd all, you know, play and everything. At the time, I had a really close friend who, if you're looking at Matthew's house, it was the house to the right. A lady named Toy Franco lives there.
Okay.
The day before, it was probably about 2 or 3 days before the shooting. I was actually at Toyling's house because her granddaughter, you see, one of my best friends. We were actually outside giving her dog a bath, and Matt was outside, and we talked to him for maybe 10 or 15 minutes, and he was actually setting up his backyard, cleaning up the little, like, plastic toy swing set things that, you know, kids have, like the little tiny ones. He was cleaning that up and setting up his backyard for this cookout or whatever that they were going to be having.
I found all of this hard to process. The idea that the special response team went through Danielle's house before going in to rescue Matt and his 3-year-old daughter just seemed so ludicrous to me. And on top of that, why had nobody mentioned this barbecue until now? On the one hand, I was skeptical. By her own admission, the stepdaughter wasn't at the house at the time when this all happened, and she herself conceded that she's fuzzy on the details. But then again, as she spoke about this barbecue, or event that supposedly happened at the Stewart's house that night, something about it started to make sense. Since first reading the police call log, the 100-minute gap between the time police arrived and actually entered the Stewart home has baffled me, as I know it has many of you. Though I've heard time and again that this delay was due to fear of a hostage situation, it has never been explained to me as to where this fear actually stemmed from. This account of a barbecue is hardly an explanation for all of that. But if true, it may provide a bit of context for one of the more confusing aspects of this case. More on that later. After the stepdaughter call, I had another realization about dots I may have failed to connect a long time ago. Last spring, I had a long phone call with Mandy, Matt Stewart's sister. I played a good portion of the audio from that interview in the second episode last season. But there was something else Mandy said that I didn't end up including in that episode. Mandy talked about a woman whose house she and Matt's family spent time in on the morning of the murder.
There was a darling of a lady whose house we were sitting in front of. I don't know her name. To this day, I don't recall. She happened to be up herself feeding a baby when it all happened. And she brought my children in and she took care of them for the rest of the evening or the early morning hours.
Was this a neighbor across the street?
No, there were several houses down. By the time we got there, there was blockades. There were blockades. You could only get so close. So maybe five houses down.
That was because of the law enforcement?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, if I recall correctly, this is the lady's house that... Because there was initially a mistake made, I don't know if mistake's the right word, misidentification of a house. You know, this is a neighborhood that has several houses that look similar. And so the police actually arrived at her house first by accident.
Uh-huh. And not at the house where Angel had called?
Right. Not at Angel's actual address. So, I mean, so it was like maybe four houses down, something like that. Anyway, but she took the kids in for the night. Before I left that evening, she gave me a rosary. It's since been broken, but I have pieces of it. She was just sweet. She was just precious and just took care of my children, you know.
I didn't initially include this part of our conversation for a number of reasons. I found it hard to believe police would have arrived at another house by mistake. That's certainly not detailed in the police report. But hearing the stepdaughter's account marked the second time someone described the police going to another house before going into Matt and Angel's. Maybe neither of them had the details just right, but I realized that if Mandy and the stepdaughter were talking about the same house, that probably meant that two different characters I'd been trying to track down for months, Danielle and the lady with the rosary, were one and the same. Following my conversation with her stepdaughter, my determination to speak to Danielle only increased. But it wasn't until earlier this year when I got the message from her saying she was ready to talk.
I was really excited when you reached out to me. Would you be willing to speak on the record?
Sure. My daughter was friends with Hannah.
Oh, was
she was actually at the house the night before.
She was with Hannah?
Yes, she slept. She was. They had a picnic the day before. And she was over there that evening, and she was going to stay over, but they were kind of like weird with, you know, sleepovers and stuff. So she never slept over, but she was always with Hannah. My kids and their kids line up in ages. I mean, the last I saw of them before the funeral, we went to the funeral and everything, and then it kind of seemed like they disappeared.
How long did you know them before all this happened?
Actually, when we went looking for houses, their house was the one we were shown. So we knew them 5 years before it happened. And we bought a house the same layout, but it's a mirror image. We were not like close friends like, oh, let's get together for dinner. But we did go to the same parties. Like the neighbor that she ran to the house, we were all friends with them.
The
Lawsons? Yes. I had just had my son on the 16th of May. He was in the NICU, and he was in there 18 days, and then I came home. I didn't want him keeping my husband up at night, so him and I slept downstairs. And we were downstairs, and it was like 12:30 or whatever it was, and I hear a knock at the door. And I answer the door, and I see this lady going, "Angel's been shot. Angel's been shot." And I was like, "What happened?" And she's like, "I need to use your phone." I open the door, like, wide. And meanwhile, I'm up, and I didn't hear anything.
Did you know her before, Brenda? Had you seen her before?
I have met her before. I don't know why she came to my house, because my house, you know, is across the street and up, like, four or five houses.
Do you remember at that time what the situation was in terms of the police presence?
Oh.
Was it blocked off?
Yes.
Or?
It was blocked off in the cul-de-sac up closer towards the entrance for Shepherd Hill, the main entrance, there were at least 2 fire trucks, a lot of police, ambulance, and I didn't know any of that was there until I opened the door. I heard nothing, and I was awake.
Part of my conversation with Danielle involves talking about Matt and Angel's 3-year-old daughter, who had remained in the house after Angel fled to call 911, and who had supposedly slept soundly in her room until the response team finally pulled her out of the house at 2:30 a.m. As Danielle and I talk about the situation with the Stewart's 3-year-old daughter, you'll notice that I edited out her name.
And she just said Angel was shot, and I was like, well, where is she? And she told me that she ran over to the Lawson's house and called, and she was at the hospital. And I was like, okay, is everybody okay? And she was like, well, still in the house. And I freaked out, and I'm like, well, what do you mean still in the house? Because to me, the first thing that would come out of, if I knew my, you know, somebody was in there, shot my daughter, she's at the house, she's okay. Well, what about the people that are still in the house?
So it took a second for her to mention it.
That Matt and were still in the house. And okay. I knew right from there that if wasn't out, Matt was dead. Because as a parent, you're going to do everything you can.
Did she say at that time that the intruder was still in the house?
She didn't say anything about an intruder. I said, well, what about Hannah and Matt? She said Hannah had slept over at Michelle's, and I tried calling Michelle, and I let it ring over. I mean, I was like a stalker calling, because I know I told Michelle, because she was like, oh, my God, I guess I'm going to keep them in bed a little longer. I got to be quiet. I need to let Hannah sleep until I can talk to somebody to see what to do.
Was it your impression that she had thought that Brenda had seen Angel before she was taken to the hospital?
I think she did, because I was out on the curb hours later. I mean, this happened from that time she got to my house between 12:30 and 1 all the way until probably 10 o'clock in the morning. Like, we were the police's, like, we made coffee, everybody was at our house. It was at our house, Matt's parents, I mean, everybody was there.
And
our house was like the last stop. They couldn't go any further.
So it could be that Brenda went to your house because it was the closest to the blockade?
Maybe. I don't know why she would run, you know, up the street if she already had been to the Lawsons. And then there's many houses in between.
Wait, so she had been to the Lawson?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yeah. She had already known that Angel had gone there, and she had talked to them.
How was she there if there was a blockade?
The blockade was coming from the main entrance. The Lawsons lived down where you can loop around. How she came in? Where
yeah.
You go down and loop around. They live on that down further. So she
right.
came up, ran up kind of towards the main entrance is where I live.
Well, probably what I'm most interested in that I've heard
okay.
is that Brenda asked to use your phone, and what
yes.
I've heard from neighbors, they've suggested that you've recounted, is that Brenda offered you a certain amount of money
yes.
to use your phone. Was it
$300? Yep.
She said,
I'll give you $300 if you let me use your phone. And I was like, you don't need to give me money. And she's like, no, here, take it. And I was like, Brenda, you don't have to give me money to use my phone. Like, it was just crazy to me.
Did she hand you the money?
She took it out. I wouldn't take it, but she took the money out.
Let me ask you this. Why do you think that she wanted to use your phone? Did she not have a cell phone?
She had a cell phone because she called Angel hours later at the hospital to tell her, very calmly, Matt's dead. Just like that. He's out of the house and Matt's dead.
You heard her say that?
I was right there. I was sitting on the curb with her.
Did it seem like she was learning that for the first time, Angel?
I couldn't hear on the other line.
Uh-huh. Was your husband there when she...
He was asleep at first, and then he came down. He was there when she said offered the money, yeah.
What was her demeanor at that point?
It wasn't like somebody that was shocked. I can tell you that.
She didn't
seem
shocked?
And then for her to... No. Yeah, she didn't seem shocked.
Your stepdaughter suggested after Brenda gave you your phone back that your outgoing calls had been deleted.
I have no idea. See, I didn't even think to look.
You didn't think to look at who she called?
No. You're just
Did you ever
shocked.
Ask her why she needed to use your phone as opposed to her cell phone?
No. No, it was pure shock. It was like, here, like, use my phone. Like, go ahead.
I never even thought about any logical reason why she would need to use your phone instead of hers.
Right.
Her phone wasn't, like, dying or, like, she needed to charge
it or
anything. No,
because she was on it, you know, a couple hours after when she talked to Angel.
But you don't remember who she called?
No, I don't.
Do you remember if your husband ever looked to see who it was she called?
No, I don't think he would even have thought anything at that time because we didn't know about the dream or the bullets being in her car and the casings being any of that until after. So it was just like, here, use the phone, whatever. And she was like, it's so sad too because they just paid Angel's school debt off. Who's
she said that to you
about
that night?
Yeah. Who's thinking about money when somebody's dead? Who cares?
Shell casings in her car?
Yeah. She said she was a hunter and her boyfriend was some millionaire and they hunted together.
Said she was a hunter and that's why
yes.
she had apparently
yes.
shell casings in her
and
car.
And she said, I have one on my keychain.
When Brenda came to see you, do you remember her telling you as to why she was in the neighborhood at the time?
Oh, yeah. Somebody that lived probably, I don't know, 35, 45 minutes away, sitting there telling me she woke up from a dream. Didn't call them to say, are you okay? She had a bad feeling. Her and Hannah were supposed to go to the beach the next day. So she figured she'd drive over that night to make sure everything was okay and then she'd be there anyway. And that's why she had large sums of money on her, because she was going to the beach with Hannah.
That next day.
Yep.
Do you remember her saying what about the dream was bad?
No, it was just a bad feeling.
Just a bad feeling. Okay.
Yep. Because we were watching, waiting to see if anything else, anybody else was coming out of the house.
Did it seem like Brenda was expecting someone to be in the house and to be caught?
No. No. For all this to go on with the SWAT team and all that to come in my house. Scare my kids half to death.
Now, why
you
did
know?
They come in? So explain why they went in your house.
Because it's the mirror image and they wanted to know what they were walking into.
But
they wanted to get a layout of the house.
And that it took them over 100 minutes to go in the house. In between that time, you're saying that they went in your house.
Right. They went in my house.
Why wouldn't they be going in to rescue?
That exactly what I was thinking. You're telling me with gunshots and screaming and all this, that four-year-old or three and a half, whatever she was back then, wasn't going to wake up. It doesn't make any sense.
You saw later. Did she seem okay?
She just seemed like she just woke up. They grabbed her. They were one of the special response guys had her. He was running up the street towards our house, and we watched her. Yeah, she was playing with my daughter. So I was kind of watching them, making coffee for the cops. Matt's sister was there and his parents.
So when I talked to Matt's sister, she mentioned a family that the house she went in, she said there was this really nice Catholic lady that sat and talked with her that, you know, that she always appreciated. She'll never forget her. Do you think that she was talking about you?
I don't know. I am Catholic.
She said that you gave her a rosary?
Yes, that was me.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's. I figured that was.
Yeah. As soon as you said a rosary, yeah. See, my daughter was at the house for the barbecue the day before, and the garage was open.
Tell me about the barbecue. What?
Okay.
You have another daughter that was there.
They're both stepdaughters. Yes. The one you talked to. She's 27.
What was the barbecue when she? Your 27-year-old daughter told me about a barbecue. I've been working on this for a year. No one has mentioned a barbecue.
It was the day before. Everybody knew about that.
The murder happened after midnight, June 9th. Was the barbecue on June 8th? Like
yes.
That night before?
The day, yeah, it was before.
Was it a neighborhood thing?
It was just a family cookout, and Hannah had invited Ashley, my daughter Ashley.
I'm thinking there's maybe a reason why no one's brought up the barbecue. I didn't
realize. A lot of people said maybe the garage was open and somebody was waiting. That's how they got in the house.
Yeah, I mean, your stepdaughter basically said that the reason why they wanted to go through your house was because they were speculating at that time. The person that killed Matt didn't break in the house. They were there for the barbecue and they hid.
See, that's what I heard, too. They were looking for places to see where they might have been hiding.
And I need to know who was there because I think someone that was there may have killed him. I've got a hunch that it was a dispute that happened, a dispute between him and someone else that ended in his death. So sometime between 7:30 and 12:45, he's murdered. There's something that has to happen in that amount of time. So that's why I'm so anxious to figure out who was at that barbecue. So you said that she ended up cleaning the house?
Oh, yeah.
How did that happen?
She told me that they wanted $5,000.
That was
yes,
like the quote
so
they
she
got.
Was going to do it herself. And she told me, you know, because it took a couple days. She told me, just come and check on me to make sure that I didn't pass out from the bleach or something. I didn't want to go in the house. So what I would do was knock on the door with something covering my hand because it was still covered in the fingerprint dust. And she would answer the door and say, okay, I'm fine. And that was it. And I checked on her a couple times a day for about a week. And that was it.
So she was in there by herself cleaning?
Yep. And she was telling us how the blood... No, I didn't see anybody else in there, but she was telling me how the blood was soaked through the floorboard.
Let me ask you this. Do you remember her taking the mattress out of the house?
I don't remember.
You don't?
No.
Do you remember when you walked up to check on her if there was blood near the front door?
I didn't want to look in.
But I mean, like, outside on the landing.
I didn't see any. All I saw was the black stuff for the fingerprint.
Oh, so, like, that they were looking for fingerprints.
Right, that the police were looking for anybody that might have touched the front door to try to get in. But there was no signs of forced entry, no fingerprints.
Did the police ever ask you about your experience with Brenda?
It wasn't them, it was the, not the FBI, the something BI.
The state bureau.
Yes, they came to my house.
Do you
remember telling
them about the phone situation?
Yes, I told them about the money. I remember that now that you brought that up.
Did they seem interested when you were talking, when you were telling them about that?
I don't know if they were just supposed to kind of act like, you know, just poker face, not to like, let anybody else on the outside know if something's important or not, but it was just like I was telling the story and they were writing down.
Do they ask to see your phone or to see your phone records?
No.
Okay.
That I can tell you, no.
I find parts of Danielle's account a little hard to believe. But in all fairness, I find Angel's account of events that night a little hard to believe. But I can say with near confidence that Matt's family did rendezvous at Danielle's house in the hours after the murder. And I have numerous witnesses in the neighborhood who claim to have seen Danielle and Brenda sitting out on the curb together, just like Danielle described. But the phone call story, parts of it just don't make any sense. Danielle said she didn't remember her outgoing calls having been deleted, like her stepdaughter said. She said she didn't remember even looking at who Matt's mother-in-law was willing to pay $300 to call. That seems like something that you would do, and something you would remember, even 10 years later. That said, from the Garrisons and other neighbors, I already knew the story about the $300 phone call was something Danielle has recounted for years. If she's making it up, or remembering it wrong, it isn't time that's distorted the narrative. There was another phone call Danielle mentioned that piqued my interest. Michelle's house was where Hannah was spending the night with her friend, Michelle's daughter. In her account, Danielle called Michelle and let her know before anyone else that something horrible had happened at the Stewart's house. I thought it would be easier to believe Danielle's recollection if that other phone call really did take place. So I planned to reach out to Michelle But as luck would have it, at the urging of one of this podcast's devoted listeners, Michelle reached out to me first.
So you knew Matt and the Stewart well?
Yes.
Do you still know the family?
I do, and I send Hannah a message every once in a while. She was like my second daughter. My daughter and her were best friends.
The night of the murder, Hannah was over at your house.
Yes, sir. They were both asleep in my daughter's room. My neighbor started calling my cell phone, and she told me, she says, "Hey, open your door. The police are there. Matt's been shot," or "Angel's been shot," I think is what she said.
Who was it that called you?
She doesn't live here anymore, but her name, Danielle Allen.
Was there an event at Matt and Angel's house that night?
Event?
Like a barbecue?
I don't think so. I know there wasn't because, you mean, like in the afternoon?
That evening.
No, not that day. I know Matt didn't get home from work. He was working until 7.
So Danielle called Michelle and told her about the shooting before police even got to her house. I take that to mean Danielle was at least somewhat in the know very early on, before police had even checked in with Michelle, which you would think they would have done immediately after learning of Hannah's location. But truth be told, there are other parts of Mandy's interview that have sent me on a goose chase or two. I think you may remember this part.
There was a person that we knew that we, that people in the community instantly drew some conclusions, but that person was cleared.
Many listeners have speculated as to who Mandy was referring to, the person she claims was thought of and later cleared. In the unedited version of this interview, Mandy provided me a few more clues as to who this person is.
But you said this was someone in the community?
He wasn't in our immediate community, but he would have been somebody known to us. Not known to Angel or the kids necessarily. I don't think they would have known him. But he would have been known to me and my family.
Okay, so like a relative.
He would have been known to us, from our life experience, in and around Mooresville, but he doesn't live in Mooresville.
Just a few weeks after my conversation with Mandy, I did another interview with a member of Matt's family who, upon conclusion of the interview, asked that I not use their name in this podcast. This person told me that the individual in question was someone in Matt's family, not by blood, but by marriage, and that the individual who was thought of had worked in law enforcement. Through knowledgeable sources in the community, I began piecing together the remnants of an old family feud that long predates Matt's murder, involving a marriage, a funeral, and inheritance. In time, I became confident that I knew who Mandy was referring to. I'll admit, I could be wrong, but I think she was talking about a guy named Clay. So I called him up.
Tell me what you're working on.
Well, there was an unsolved murder in 2009 in Mooresville of a man named Matt Stewart.
Yeah.
You're somehow related with Matt, and your name has come up a couple times, and I just wanted to reach out to see if you'd be willing to speak with me.
Yeah, sure. I don't know how informative or helpful that I can be, but, man, I'd be glad to talk to you about it. I'm super curious as to what context my name, how I would be sort of brought up in the course of the conversation about that.
Next month, we'll hear more from Clay and Michelle. Unforgotten is a Bold Era production, written and recorded by myself, Freddie Wilson, in the always sunny Daytona Beach, Florida. Special thanks to Danielle, Michelle, and Clay for their contributions to this episode. As always, this series is dedicated to the life of Matt Stewart. May his memory remain unforgotten. If you have any suggestions about topics or questions to be included in future special episodes, you can submit them on the forum, located at unforgotten.freeforums.net.